Welcome to selfdiscoveryradio.com, where we bring you insightful, liberating, intuitive people from around the globe. They share their life's journeys and experience wisdom to guide you on your own discovery of self. Each week, from Tuesday to Monday, we will bring you new shows on our many genres, and with over 1,400 shows, we have the answers for you. Enjoy your listening on selfdiscoveryradio.com. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another edition of Their Story Matters with me, your host, Sarah Troy, and my guest today, Tim Ballard. We're going to be talking about child sex slaves. It is something that we really shouldn't be talking about in this day and age. It seems to be more escalating than decreasing, and we really have to look to the sickness of why children's sex slavery is still so prevalent. And Tim Ballard decided that this was something he was going to take on and bring more to the forefront. There is a movie that is coming out on May 16th called The Abolitionist, where he actually, as a documentary, goes in right into the lion's den, so to speak, and really looks at what is going on, really giving us this view of sex slavery around the world, and really what we can do about it, and being aware for a start, and being supportive, and standing up against it is, you know, the first step. So we're going to encourage you to see this movie, but we're going to go and find out first why Tim decided to take this path. He believes that human trafficking has become the world's fastest growing crime, with over 27 million people enslaved and nearly 2 million of them children, something we just can't accept. He's a special agent at, used to work for Homeland Security, U.S. government, after spending decades rescuing children from child sex tourism domestically and overseas. A very difficult job. Somebody has to do it, and we're very grateful that it is him. Let's bring Tim on and just discuss the horrors, but also what we can do about it. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Thank you so much. It's so great to be here.
So, a very difficult job. I mean, this is something that... I'm sure that when it tugged at your heart, it's both heart and embracing when you can rescue somebody, but heartbreaking when you see what really is going on. You know, what took you down this path, you know, to tackle sex slavery?
I'm sorry, you cut out right there.
Okay, I'm asking what took you down this path, you know, as your battlefront, the sex... child sex slavery trade.
Yes, excellent. So, yeah, I spent 12 years as a special agent and undercover operator for the Department of Homeland Security. And during that time, I was assigned to infiltrate child trafficking rings, kids being sold online, kids being sold in the open, in the public. And I worked domestic and international doing this. And it was something I didn't want to do. It was something that I actually told my bosses no at first. It's such a dark thing. So I understand why people don't want to see it.
Yes.
I didn't want to see it, but I had an experience early in my career where I had done several cases dealing with child pornography and catching the end users and arresting them. But I had a case early on where I actually was involved with a physical rescue of a child who was being trafficked back and forth from Mexico. And when I saw this child, and there was a point during the rescue operation where during the investigative part where the dust kind of settled, and this little boy came running to me and jumped into my arms and was just crying, and he said, "I don't belong here."
Mm-hmm.
And he was just 5 years old, and to hear a 5 year old say, "I don't belong here," it just shook me, and I started to cry, and I thought, this is real. I mean, this is really happening. These numbers are real. There really are 2 million children like this little boy. And that's when, you know, I made a decision that I would spend the rest of my life combating this crime. I worked for years later after that case. And then I kind of recognized that this problem's so big that we need different approaches. And I thought that as a private organization, we could move in ways to support governments, and there weren't enough of those. There weren't enough private organizations that were that were doing what they can do best to support this cause and this government, and or the different governments who are combating this. And so in 2013, I left my job in the government and started a private organization. And we've now been in close to 15 countries. We've been able to rescue hundreds of kids.
Bravo.
And put close to 200 pedophiles and travelers in jail. And it's an enormous problem, and it will never go away until people know about it and we all start doing something about it. And that's another major benefit to being out of the government, is I can talk openly.
Yes.
And really, we can shine a light, like the movie The Abolitionist that comes out May 16th, is an opportunity for people to see this is real. And if we don't all engage it, then it's not going to go away.
We can't turn our heads away from it, can we? You know, this is, you know, one of your statements, every 30 seconds, a child is sold into the sex trade. You know, it's, we're meant to be more educated. We're meant to be more sophisticated. We're meant to be more enlightened right now. We're meant to know the rights from wrongs. This isn't the dark ages. Yet child sex slavery seems to be on the increase.
Absolutely, it's on the increase. It's the fastest growing criminal enterprise in the world, human trafficking is. And a startling statistic that I think people don't recognize, you know, we kind of congratulate ourselves for having gotten rid of slavery in the world. Mm-hmm. Well, if you added up all the slaves that were enslaved during the 350 plus years of the transatlantic slave trade, there's more living slaves alive today than all of those added up.
Oh my God.
And it's just it rears its ugly head in a different way. It's more hidden. It's not out in the open. But it's just, you know, I sit back and I watch presidential debates and politicians, and I'm thinking to myself, why aren't we talking about the most glaring problem of all, that people are slaves, that 2 million of those slaves are children who are forced to have sex for money? How is that not the most important thing on the national agenda? But very few people bring it up. Very few people talk about it, and we need to change that culture. We need to make people aware that slavery is alive and well, and it will not go away until we all know about it and we all do something about it.
Why do you think it is so much more prevalent today? Is it the internet? Are these, you know, sex slavery things based on a religion? Is it just still that, you know, men think that they have the right to do this because it's their men? You know, where do you think this all stems from?
I think maybe a little bit of everything you just mentioned, but something that's happened is, like, our organization, we focus mostly on the children, and of course men and women and children are being exploited in different ways and enslaved. We really focus on the 2 million children who are forced into sex slavery. And so the question that I have to ask myself is, if the 2 million children for sale, what kind of demand for child sex justifies that number? Why are there so many people, literally millions of men, who want to engage in sex with children? And I have to go to the pornography epidemic. I call it an epidemic, that because of the internet and the ability and the accessibility and the addiction, that, you know, people might argue whether there are such things as a porn addiction. I know there is. I mean, I've been doing this for 15 years, and I've interrogated dozens of people, the pedophiles, traffickers, people who want to engage in this with children, and they all have the same story, that, look, I became a sex addict, and I started with pornography when I was 15 years old, and then I needed more and more and more, and until the adult legal pictures weren't good enough, they weren't creating the chemical reactions I wanted, and so I started looking to children and anything to shock my system. And so we've created this enormous demand because of all this porn that I believe can, not always, okay, but enough so that we have 2 million kids who are for sale. It creates sex addicts in mass, and this is the reason why kids are lured out and kidnapped and trafficked and sold for sex.
Right, and of course they'll choose, you know, poorer areas, because, you know, where is the fight? What can the parents do? And certainly the communities around there are more closed in, or they're terrified. So, you know, once those children are snatched, you know, there aren't very many people that are going to step forth and trying to rescue or even stand up against the people doing it.
Absolutely, and that's where, and that was an issue I saw when I was in the government, where we would go overseas and we could only work cases really that had a solid connection back to the United States. But most of the kids didn't have a connection back. They weren't under the jurisdiction or purview of the United States government, and they were stuck in governments that were under-resourced, and there was no one looking for them. This is the kind of crime that if you want to rescue these kids, you have to be proactive. They're not going to fall in your lap. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not that kind of crime. You've got to be proactive. You've got to strategize. You've got to put a plan together. And our goal as an organization is to get to these governments and give them that plan, because we know what it takes. We know what it requires. We help them in terms of software and teaching them how to go online and find the pedophiles and traffickers that work in the dark places on the internet. We teach them how to go undercover physically and how to find these guys, how to talk to them, how to do it legally. And this is what's needed. The children, you know, they deserve this. You know, they yeah. deserve it from us, the adults in the world.
Right. So basically what you have to do is take the need for the demand away. You know, obviously it's a sickness. It's become a sickness. Anybody that can look to a child for sexual thrills or even look at them in that way, it is a sickness. But if you take away their source, just like any drug addict, take away the drugs, you know, they have to deal with the sickness. And of course, the internet, as you say, the dark web, or even, you know, so many sites and so many areas now that, you know, have this protective private man's club type thing. What you really need is a wonderful algorithm that can get in there, that can recognize all of these and kind of spike them back. But it's, as you said, you take down one and another comes back. Is it hitting the people at the source of where they get the material, or is it hitting society and the sickness that has become so prevalent?
I think that, you know, I think it's both. I think that we need to attack this issue from, you know, from two different angles. One, you know, we went down to Colombia, for example, last year, and we did four operations, rescued over 120 victims, most of them children.
Bravo.
And thank you. And what happened was, after we did that, we would go back to the areas that kids were being sold, and no one was selling kids. Because for the first time maybe ever in these parts of the world, there was a consequence. Before
yeah.
that, these traffickers and these travelers were working with impunity. So now they're at least looking over their shoulders. At least they know there's a consequence. I could go to jail for selling kids or buying kids. So that's one part of this. And the other part you hit on is this demand. And I think that people don't understand how sex addicts are made. And they're made through largely through pornography. And I think there needs to be more education on what pornography does to the mind. What it can do. Again, a very small percentage of porn users actually turn into predators, but still there's enough of them that become such addicts that they start turning to darker and more illegal acts that there's a problem.
Yeah.
And people don't understand. They need to understand from a young age that porn is to the mind what drugs are to the mind, and it can actually affect you that way.
So there has to be an awful lot of education out there to the general public on how to recognize somebody that's going down this dark spiral. You know, if your husband or your son or your boyfriend or is at the computer for long hours, won't let you see what they're looking at. You know, behaviors are changing. You know, it's kind of, we want to get down to the root of it and stop it before it escalates. But again, as you said, it becomes something so embarrassing, or people, you know, don't want to address it. Oh, I don't want to go there. But we have to go there. We have to be aware. And it starts in our own home front, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. You know, people, we got to stop thinking that this problem is something that happens far, far away from us.
Yeah.
It happens right here in the United States, for example. It's the largest producer of child pornography. It's the largest consumer of child pornography. And who are the travelers who are going overseas and engaging in this sex? It's Americans. It's Westerners. And
yeah.
that's not to say that locals aren't abusing their own kids. In fact, statistically, you'll see that the children in wherever they are mostly being abused by people in their own country. But that's not to say that our people aren't going out and engaging us. They certainly are. And so it's a problem that does start here at home, and we can't stop. We can't continue this mindset of, oh, that happens over there and there's nothing I can do about it. This is an international problem. It happens everywhere. Thousands of children are brought into the United States every year and forced into the commercial sex markets here at home.
Yes.
So this is a problem everywhere.
Yeah, and it's not just a poverty problem. It's not just the poor kids. You know, although it's not necessarily going to hit the rich kid quite so much because the parents maybe can afford to do something about it. But if it's one child that has been abducted, it affects us all. How can we look at our own children and ignore the others? So we actually, as human beings, need to step up and put aside the uncomfortable feeling about this and step forth and say, we're not going to tolerate this anymore, and we're going to join the fight.
Absolutely. It's, you know, you look at these kids, and I tell people, look, when it comes to children, are there really borders and boundaries? Who cares where they are? These mm-hmm. are kids. And if they don't have someone looking out for them, because they don't, usually parents are out of the picture, or the parents are part of the problem. We owe it to them as adult human beings to stand yes. up and save them and pull them out of this and end this.
I mean, you talked about rescuing a 5-year-old boy. I mean, who could even think of doing something such an atrocity to that age? In your trailer, you know, a 10-year-old already pregnant, what was it, a 14-year-old already had 2 children. These are children. You know, what happens to them now, that means that damage is for the rest of their lives, even if their lives are long, because I'm sure that even when you rescue them, there's an enormous amount of counseling that has to go through for them to find any self-worth in their lives.
That's right. That's an important part for our organization. We won't even operate in a country unless we know that there's aftercare and a rehabilitation available for that child, because there is no rescue if the children can't be healed mm-hmm. and put into a good place. And you know, not only do we meet the basic needs of those kids, and by basic needs, we've got to be prepared to take these kids and raise them, have them yes. with partners who can raise them, because they might never be able to go home. There might not be a home. And so, but beyond that, what we find, it's so important that these kids, as they're being healed, that they know there's another option for them. We had one victim who's becoming a survivor now in one of our rehab facilities that we partner with in Latin America, who, you know, she was struggling with her healing. And what we did was we went down and said, look, what do you want to be? And she said, I always want to be a hairdresser. I said, we will give you a scholarship. Once you get of age, we will let you go to any beauty school. We will pay for it. We will make sure. And that's when they start seeing, it's an important part of the healing, that there's options, that they see that they're not a sex slave. They're not someone's property.
Right.
Because that's what these people, these traffickers do to these kids. They get them at a young age, and by the time they're, you know, a lot of them get into the business when they're as young as 9, 10, 11 years old. And by the time they're 16 or 17, they don't believe that they're anything but a commodity for men to use. And until you show them that that's not who they are, that they there are choices, and you've got to give them those choices, then they start seeing themselves in a different light. And then they really start to heal.
What happens to those 16-year-olds? They're no longer kids. They're not a commodity anymore. What do they do with them?
Once they turn 18, you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Once they're adults? It's very difficult. So when we do a rescue operation, sometimes we'll, you know, the younger girls and boys, there's boys in there as well, are very happy generally. They know that they're free from this, and they get to go home or to a place that they're not abused. But when they get to be older, 17, 18, 19 years old, even the ones that have been trafficked since they were 12, they have to make a choice, and it's very tragic. It's very difficult because the choice often is not to get rehabilitation. They almost have, a lot of them have almost a Stockholm syndrome,
yeah.
where they want to stay with their pimp who's been abusing them and beating them. That's not always the case. A lot of them do want the help, and all we can do at that point, because they're legal of age, all we can do is say, look, we offer you this other option, we hope you take it. And sometimes they do, but oftentimes they don't, and they go back into that world.
When you do manage to get, you know, one of these victimers, you know, the pimps, the whatever they are, when you start interrogating them, do they have any remorse? Do they understand what they're doing? Or is this something that's just societal and that, you know, they just do it?
You know, it's funny, you know, you look across at these people who are engaging in abuse of children, and I've never quite been able to figure them out. I've sat in front of dozens and dozens of them, whether it's during an interrogation or an undercover operation, And I remember one time I was looking across at this trafficker, and he was selling 10, 11-year-old kids to me, thinking that I was going to buy them for a party, and we ended up rescuing all the kids, and he ended up going to jail. But I remember during that one in particular, looking at him and thinking, you know, he's talking about these kids like they're computers or cars that he's selling me. And I really thought he really believes they're commodities. And it was so odd was that he, during a break in our negotiation, he pulled out his phone and showed me his own 6-year-old daughter and was bragging about her, how beautiful she is. And I just thought, what happened in your mind that you can compartmentalize like this? And I think it's sex addiction and it's greed.
Right.
And those two things together make a monster. And that's who these guys become. They become monsters.
Of course, wherever there is money to be made from somebody else's suffering, you know, that human condition, you know, which is a sickness of humanity, will always be there. I mean, you know, we're not just seeing it with, you know, with sex trafficking. We're seeing, you know, you talk about slavery. There's different types of slavery around the world, and any kind of regimes that enslave their people will not allow them free will. You know, that is slavery. I mean, it always comes down to power and greed, doesn't it? And I think the reason why those people can do what they do, as you say, they compartmentalize it. They don't look upon these people as human. They just look upon them as a dollar sign. And it really makes you begs to question, you know, what we are in humanity and the upbringing that these people have. Do you look at their upbringing of the perpetrators and see that there is maybe a trend of abuse in their own family, or that, you know, this was always okay for them to do? I mean, what kind of person takes these kids and makes sex slaves out of them?
You know, it's interesting. I've looked for those trends. I've looked for those ties and those connections. And the truth is, I've never been able to find them. They come from every walk of life. They're professionals. It's the most amazing thing. There's no solid profile that you can peg on these guys. They're people who have become sex addicts, or they're people who are just love money so much, depending on which side of the negotiation they're on, and it affects anybody and everybody. It truly does. And that's what makes it so scary.
Yes. You talked about boys, but what is the percentage between girls and boys that you see?
You know, I've never found any statistics on it. Anecdotally, I can say that probably about 10% of the victims are boys. But there definitely is a demand for that, and people do definitely go into the dark black market for that. But I'd say 90% of the kids that we have seen that we've been able to help are girls, are females.
And, you know, you talked about the families, they're not being able to go back, because a lot of the families, they have so many kids, and it's like, well, sell one of the daughters, you know, for money to provide for the other kids or for themselves or whatever. And it's, you know, again, it's how can you have that mentality? How can you raise a child and then hand them over for that? But in a lot of places, you know, where that poverty is there, it's just something they do, isn't it?
It's sometimes it's something they do. More often than not, it's irresponsible parenting, I'd say. It's a desperation, and someone comes by and says, "Hey, look, I'll take your daughter to the city. I'll make her, you know, we'll give her a job as a nanny. We'll give her an education. We'll give her a cell phone. She'll call you every weekend." And the parents, you know, you watch these stories and you participate, and you think, "How did you think that this was a good idea?" Mm-hmm. And then they'll give the family some money. Here's her first payment of $100 or $500. And it's almost like a willful just kind of suspension of reality for a second, and they get greedy and become bad parents.
Yeah.
And let their kids go, and then they never hear from their kids again.
Right.
And the kids are forced into a sex industry.
How many of these kids actually die in this situation?
You know, it's more, I don't have a statistic on it, but it's more than people would like to know.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times they get sick. A lot of times they get a sexually transmitted disease. And a lot of times when they get older and they get into their 20s, the pimp doesn't want them anymore, because they're catering to a market that wants children or younger people. And they're just disposed of, and they end up beggars, or they end up dead of a disease, or they end up getting beaten up by their pimp, or you know, they really are. There's a great book by an academic named Kevin Bale called Disposable People, mm-hmm. and he talks about this, how there's this mentality of there's people just are disposable to these traffickers and to these abusers, and they mean nothing. It's like a cattle that you can just kill when you want the meat, you know, and that's how they treat these people, and it's just devastating. And this is again why we need to shine a light on this, because if more people knew about it, if more people knew this was a problem, more people would rise up and intervene.
Yes.
And we could change cultures and open eyes and prevent this.
Now, you have this movie coming out May 16th. And is that the premiere, or is it a one-time
yes.
thing? Tell us about that.
May 16th is the premiere. It's the movie's called The Abolitionist. It's by Academy Award-winning producer of Schindler's List, Gerald Mullen. And basically what it is this a film crew followed my teams around as we went to different countries and rescued children. They went in undercover with hidden cameras. They went in undercover to get this footage. And the movie is basically, technically it's in the documentary category, but I call it live action documentary, because it really is, the audience actually feels like you're embedding with my team as we go in undercover and rescue these kids and arrest these perpetrators and these predators.
And are we going to be able to see this at regular movie theaters once this is...
That's right. It's a theatrical release on May 16th. It's going to open in 600-plus theaters throughout the country. And if your listeners can go to theabolitionistsmovie.com to find out which theater that it will be playing in their area. Or you could also go to our foundation website, which is OUR, stands for Operation Underground Railroad, OURRescue.org, and learn more about that movie there as well.
I mean, how is this taking a toll on you? I mean, you've been doing this for so many years. I know every child you rescue is worth it. But how has this taken a toll on you?
It is. It's difficult. It's a lot of tears, a lot of pain. But I made the decision early on that, you know, whatever pain I feel witnessing or participating in this is absolutely nothing relative to the pain that these children are going through. So, you know, it's something that you make a decision to deal with. And, you know, I have my own children, and it becomes personal, you know, and for me, it's become personal. When I see a child that's 12 years old that we're trying to rescue, I immediately see my 12-year-old or my 10-year-old, you know. Every child I see that we're trying to rescue, I instantly see the face of whatever child, you know. I have six kids of my own, so I can find that face of yeah. the child that's closest, you know, in age to the victim, and it's very personal. I mean, it's very personal to me. These are such innocent children, and now that keeps me motivated. It keeps me, keeps me sad a lot of the time, but it also keeps me motivated, and so I appreciate that it happens to me, and that I can continue the fight and convert more people to it.
Right. One child saved, right? It's we want 1,000, we want 1,000,000, we want as many, we want all of them saved, but it's one child at a time, and you've made a difference in that child's life, and that's what's important. How do people support your organization? Because clearly this costs money, and you know, how do people become a part of this movement and bring this awareness?
People need to. I know people ask me all the time, "What can I do?" And I tell them, learn about the cause, and then you'll know better than I can tell you what you can do. Maybe it's a different organization that you support. Maybe it's not ours, and that's okay. You know, maybe you are a great writer, so you write a book or you write blogs about it. Maybe you're into the political scene, and so you push your congressmen and your senators to do more in legislation. Whatever it might be. Figure out what you're good at and get on board. Maybe you like the rehab side and you want to find an organization. Maybe you're into adoptions and you want to help people learn about how they can adopt children who are at risk to be trafficked. Or there's so many areas that people can get involved in. But I think the most important thing they can do is watch this movie. I don't think there's ever been a movie made like this that actually takes the cameras into a child rescue situation so you can see that it's real. And that, and then from there, you become a partner in a in the cause of rescuing children, and then you'll figure out at that point what you can do, and then we invite you to do it.
And how can people support your organization?
They can go to our website. Our website is ourrescue.org. We are a nonprofit 501c3 organization, and we operate solely on the goodwill of people who believe that we are making a difference. And our website's very self-explanatory about what we do and how we do it. We have footage of our rescues, and we encourage people to come support us that way.
Well, I commend you for the work that you're doing. It takes a special heart. You know, as it takes a particular mindset to go and do the crime, it takes a heart and a soul and compassion to go and stand up against this and face what you have to face all the time. And it's not just questioning if you're going and buying kids. You know, you're putting yourself in danger. You're facing some people who don't want to let go of their product. And, I thank you so, so much for doing what you're doing and also for bringing it to our attention with this movie. Folks, as he said, it doesn't matter what you do, but do something. Don't turn away. Don't ignore this. Whether you have children or don't have children, every child deserves a life and deserves a childhood. And no child ever should have to be a sex slave to anybody out there ever in this world. So we need to step up and do whatever we need to do on whatever scale, but just be proactive. Tim, thank you so much for being with us today and taking the time out. I truly do appreciate it. Folks, the premiere of the movie is on May 16th, and then it goes in through the theatres. Please go and see it. Go and support it. Start a conversation about it. Do a book club about it. Blog about it. Speak about it. Don't let it die, because there are children out there that are suffering that need your voice, need your action. And the only way we're going to make these changes is to bring the awareness. So thank you, Tim, for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Folks, remember, it's your action that these children are waiting on.